Kia ora, welcome to Dateline Pacific. Ko Toku Ingoa, ko Johnny Blades. Coming up.
We are waiting patiently for the time that we get the green light from them, and then we're ready to go.
Growers and the Pacific both itching for seasonal workers to deploy to New Zealand.
Wahinga te totara I te maumi a Tāne. The totara has fallen in the forest of Tāne.
Tributes paid to the former Cook Islands Prime Minister and physician Joe Williams at a New Zealand memorial service. But we'll start Dateline today with an update from the Pacific Islands COVID-19 flashpoint, French Polynesia. Three more people have died in French Polynesia from COVID-19 as the total number of confirmed cases so far in the territory surged past 7,000. The death toll is now 29. And the number of active cases in the community has risen to 2,391. Walter Zweifel's been covering this outbreak from the outset. I asked him how the Pacific Territory ended up with one of the highest rates of COVID infection in the world.
The crucial point was the decision back in July to resume international travel, and that meant allowing in flights from America and from France, and that was coupled with the decision to abolish quarantine requirements. There used to be a quarantine requirement for arriving passengers. There was the idea was to stay in quarantine for 2 weeks. It was challenged, and it was deemed at the time that it was not fully compatible with French law. But anyway, the decision was to do away with quarantine requirements. People had to be COVID-free on departure, and they were tested 4 days after arrival. Within a few weeks of this new regime that was started in mid-July, first cases of COVID-19 were detected, and from there it just spread gradually at a growing pace through this September and into October. In context, there were about the same number of cases a month ago in French Polynesia as there were in New Zealand. We're talking about 1,500, 1,600. Now, the explosion in case numbers in French Polynesia means they've got past 7,000 cases.
It doesn't seem to be abating. Are none of the measures that are recommended, like social distancing or mask wearing, being adhered to, or are they not working?
It seems that they're not working. There's been admonishment that people should wear masks in public places. There was also then a decision to make a zone of Inupiaitē an area where people had to wear masks. Social distancing has been encouraged. In the latest measure introduced last weekend, the government decided to impose a curfew. Initially, it was to be for 9 hours, but then they decided to shorten it so that people could go to work in the morning. So it ends at 4 a.m. instead of 6 a.m. But these measures have seemingly not worked.
So the curfew is in force in Tahiti and in Moorea, but also there are other parts of the territory that the virus has spread to.
Yes, the virus has now been reported in all archipelagos. That means in the Austral Islands in the south, in the Tuamotus. It's been up in the Marquesas Islands, and surprisingly also all the way out east, that is in Mangareva, which is in the Gambia group. So the virus has spread everywhere. The problem, of course, is if there come complications, healthcare systems would be stretched. In outer islands, it's more difficult to take care of people. In Tahiti, that's the main hospital. That's essentially where they try to concentrate all care facilities, and that's where, you know, people are in hospital. We're talking now, several dozen people in hospital, and close to 30 are now in intensive care.
Are you seeing any new response from Paris, given that they've got their own problems with the outbreak? It's surging on mainland France.
Well, France has just declared another lockdown with the implication that people in France can't travel. That would mean that no people can travel from France to French Polynesia. There's no indication yet from French Polynesia that the borders will close. There's no indication that there is going to be a lockdown in French Polynesia. So we just have to see how this is going to evolve. The decision by President Macron to impose a lockdown in place is for all French territories, but he said that overseas territories, that is like Réunion, Guadeloupe and French Polynesia, they can make adaptations according to the local conditions, and that will be up to the French High Commission in conjunction with the French Polynesian government to decide if any of these lockdowns measures will be imposed there. But at the moment, we don't know yet if they're going to adopt any of this.
Walter Zweifel there. A New Zealand memorial service has been held for the former Cook Islands Prime Minister and Doctor, Joe Williams. He died aged 85 last month of COVID-19 in Auckland, where he'd been working as a physician. People from many different walks of life converged at the Vodafone Events Centre in Auckland on Thursday for the service. Christine Ravoy was there and joins me now. Christine, how was the turnout?
Kia ora, Johnny. There was several hundred people were there. I would put it at about 700 people at least that turned up at the Vodafone Events Centre to, farewell Dr. Joe Williams.
He obviously was a very revered figure. He had done a lot in his career, both as a physician and a politician. So I imagine the tributes were looking at his legacy in those fields.
Absolutely. He's a national hero. That's what we're hearing from all the people that spoke about him and the tributes that were pouring in from all the speakers, including his one that was from his daughter. And it was a very tearful one, but it brought everyone to tears. One of his daughters spoke on behalf of the family. But everyone else that spoke, including representatives from the Cook Islands government and the New Zealand government, all sang along the same lines of what an incredible legacy Dr. Joe Williams, or Papa Joe as he was fondly known and called, that he's left for the region in terms of politics and medicine, but in particular for the Cook Islands people themselves. This is a huge loss for the Cook Islanders.
Let's have a quick listen to the Cook Islands High Commissioner, Elizabeth Koteka.
The honour with which we bestow on him today stands as a significant representation of his success and professional achievement. Dr. Joe established a strong presence in the early years of modern development in the Cook Islands and went on to provide important markers throughout our historical record of national development.
New Zealand's Minister for Pacific Peoples, Aupito Williams, CEO, paid tribute to Dr. Williams. He's saying that it was a fitting and appropriate way for him to use the Maori whakatauki to describe the life of Papa Joe.
Wahinga te totara I te maunui a Tāne. The totara has fallen in the forest of Tāne. Is an appropriate proverb to describe the life and death of Dr. Joe Williams. A totara tree is a special tree and belongs to the group of chiefly trees, or rākau rangatira. I therefore think it is very fitting and appropriate that we use this Māori whakatauki to describe Papa Joe Williams. He was a giant of a man.
Quite a moving service. How would you describe the atmosphere?
Johnny, it was solemn. It was sad at times with the speeches. There was lots of singing. There was lots of musical tributes from various groups and people. There was even one presentation of a beautiful Samoan hymn by the members of the Pacific Medical Association that took part in the service. And they had songs in the Cook Islands community here in Aotearoa. It's their songs of praise and love for their beloved son.
New Zealand's horticulture sector is one of various industries under strain because of travel restrictions in place due to the pandemic. Along with viticulture, the sector has been a real star of the New Zealand economy in recent years. Pacific workers who come to New Zealand each year under the recognised seasonal employer scheme have been integral to that growth. They in turn earn remittances, which are important for their home communities and the economies of their home country. But this has all been disrupted by COVID-19, and Pipfruit New Zealand's Gary Jones says his sector is about 3,000 or 4,000 workers short. But he says the growers believe they should be able to bring in workers from COVID-free countries in the Pacific. He told me that plans are in place to ensure Pacific workers who come for the seasonal work can get back home again safely.
We absolutely believe that we should be able to bring workers in, not quarantine them, but isolate them. and test them and have something more appropriate to the level of risk of bringing workers in from COVID-free countries. And that would allow us to support the Pacific Islands and the investment of getting workers home and equally having strong isolation mechanisms in place and cover the costs of those when we return the workers. And I think that's something the government, I think, is up for, or the new government that's being formed, I expect, will be up for. And it's probably been a little bit awkward to get to that level of detail prior to the election, but we're positive that the new incoming government will be ready for those discussions.
So were you saying, though, that the limited capacity of some of the Pacific Island participating countries to be able to quarantine people as necessary is one of the obstacles or the pinch point, as you put it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's important when we bring workers in is our ability to make sure that when the work's finished that they can go home and aren't stuck here not working. And the government knows that's important, and we said it's very, very important as well. It's not healthy for workers to be stuck here, and we've worked really, really hard over the last few months to look after the health and well-being of workers. And so if we bring workers back in, part of that plan has to be about getting them home. Now we're putting together plans to do that. We'll be presenting them to government, and I think they'll be received reasonably positively. But I would hope that all the players here, including the Pacific Island governments, all come together to get a good solution so that we can support those Pacific Island economies and the New Zealand economies in a combined, mutually beneficial way.
Is your organisation in discussions with the Pacific countries, governments?
Yeah, so we've been working closely with the Pacific governments, especially Tonga and Samoa, to return their workers home. And we've just started those conversations in the last few weeks about getting their workers back in. And they're very, very supportive, of course, and ready to pivot their efforts into making that work. But it's about those governments, our industry, our communities where we'll place these workers, including the DHBs in those areas, MIQs if needed, or isolation and oversight of that, and our own government ministries to all come together in a bit of a pipeline to overcome all the obstacles in that chain, I suppose, of bringing those workers back in, and particularly getting them home safely.
And time is of the essence, isn't it? Because the season is moving forward.
That's right. So we'll be presenting papers to government in the next couple of weeks. We don't know who ministers are, of course, at the moment, but we'll be looking to start communicating with ministers and ministries as soon as we're able, and present cases to urgently move to get workers back in. You know, the sooner the better. The critical time in the apple industry is going to be at thinning time, which is November and December, but then the absolute critical time is at harvest through February through to May. Other industries, such as summer fruit, come really under pressure in December where they have to start harvesting. And that's really where the most urgent need will be.
Pip Fruit New Zealand's trade policy and strategy spokesman, Gary Jones. Meanwhile, in Samoa, seasonal workers are playing a waiting game as they look to return to New Zealand. The Assistant Chief Executive Officer at Samoa's Labour, Export and Employment Division, Lemalu Nele Leloa, says on their end, everyone is ready to deploy. She told me the ball is in New Zealand's court.
We are still waiting. Samoa's ready for our workers to be deployed overseas. It's just a matter of New Zealand opening borders or opening or not opening. We have teams requesting when are they going to leave for the next season. But yeah, we are telling them to just be patient, and we are waiting for some good news from New Zealand. I'm not sure whether the employers are pushing this with MB and the government. I am not sure. Having to play our own part, we have to be prepared, and we are ready to roll.
Some of them are pushing, but the politicians have been a bit distracted lately, but soon things might free up.
I think it's a waiting game right now.
And in terms of Samoa's capacity to be able to have the workers when they come back processed in whatever way you've got, whether it's isolation or quarantine, is that system in place when they return?
Yeah, because that's the reason. Because that it was the start of the COVID-19, and since we are COVID-free, there is definitely a need for us to return our workers when their season ends. That's the normal practice. Yeah, but we were taken by the surprise by surprise with the COVID-19, and not only us, but all the other countries.
And you must have, what, thousands of workers ready to go, would that be right?
Yeah, we have thousands of returnees. Now, bearing in mind, these are not new workers. These are returnees that return to their original employers. The horticulture in New Zealand, they really wanted workers from Samoa. Given this time frame was, we're still waiting for New Zealand, for the employers to, you know, get their workers back to New Zealand. We're using this time to have our reintegration program with our workers returning, which is really good that we got all the workers here. And most of them wanted to come back and start the new season.
Do you have a particular number looking to come over this season if it's going to be able to be done?
Well, normally between October and November, you're looking at 1,000 plus workers. But most of other workers are still in New Zealand. They opted to extend their contract.
And do you know how many are currently in New Zealand who have extended those contracts, as you said?
An estimate of about 200 to 300. Yeah, it's mostly Mr. Apple's workers because they are the biggest employer of RSD from Samoa. We're just waiting. We're just waiting for New Zealand. And we've just had the bilateral talks, senior officials talks with the New Zealand authorities, Jackie Fitzgerald and her team from Wellington. Seasonal workers was one of the agenda in the meeting. I thank the government of New Zealand for helping our workers repatriating them back home, and also taking care of workers that got injured and also workers that died from accidents, road accidents. I told them that we are waiting patiently for the time that we get the green light from them, and then we're ready to go.
It's Lemalu Nele Lealua of Samoa's Labour Export and Employment Division. And that wraps up this edition of Dateline from RNZ Pacific. Thanks for joining us. There's more on our website, rnzi.com. Till next time, tofa.